Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies,
yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about thrillers.
It occurred to me that Cruising is like the most awkward sleepover movie ever.
It's not just about science fiction.
You put your chin to your chest and you're like, you're so nervous. We're all going to die.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and just about everywhere you can listen to podcasts.
Everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley. Happy Scary Movie Month, everyone. And to kick off Scary Movie Month proper, I'm joined for this very special episode on Alien by JB.
Oh, it's okay. I just fell down. There seems to be a life form inside of the pod.
Very good, very good. Hopefully by now you've listened to our Blood Rage commentary, which dropped on October 1st, and people seem to be enjoying.
They seem to be enjoying the Blood Rage commentary and the suggestion of the delight of floor corn.
It is Scary Movie Month, which means hopefully everyone's participating in the Scary Movie Challenge. Every time you watch a scary movie during the month of October, head over to fthismovie.com, look for the Scary Movie Challenge tab at the top of the page, click on it, find that day's post, and write your seven-word review.
And I have to say, this might be obvious. People might listen and say, well, what are you thinking, you goof? I don't know how you do the Scary Movie Challenge and have a full-time job. I really don't. This is the first year that I fully participated.
Yeah.
It is my intent to have at least one a day.
All right.
At least one a day. And it's all I can do. That's Wednesday. Watch movie. Post seven-word review. Nap.
That sounds perfect.
I don't know how people do it, but we're three days in, right?
Yeah.
And so far, it's been an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, Marcus Theater Chain has scary movies every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 10 o'clock. It's only $5. Not to be outdone, the Regal Chain, although it's much more limited in terms of the number of theaters, there is one Regal Theater in Illinois that's doing it.
Right.
But they've got some interesting things coming up. Check the web. And some of them are double features.
Yep.
And those are Mondays and Tuesdays. So it looks like we're filling in the week. And yeah, obviously, depending on where you live, every little orchestra likes to show Nosferatu or Phantom of the Opera and right, accompany it live to raise money. It's so much fun.
And we have several 24-hour marathons coming up.
Coming up. And thanks to Marcus, Sunday afternoon, I was able to see The Tingler.
Ooh.
In a real movie theater.
Let's come back to that. Let's do the seven-word
okay,
reviews, and then we'll do what have you seen lately. So we mentioned the seven-word reviews. We're going to read some of our favorites now, as is our way during Scary Movie Month. Jay Bones, you begin.
Kanji Chris has watched Life Force, which is a favorite of yours and a favorite of mine. And the review reads, Aliens too sexy. Couldn't focus on plot.
Ryan Byam writes, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. What is the polar opposite of subtext?
Mac McIntyre, who we love. This one is so good, it instantly got some comments on the post. Mac McIntyre, reviewing Plan 9 from Outer Space, has written, "More Tor going full bore, por favor."
A new commenter during Scary Movie Month 2017, Trump Film Reviews.
Yes, I want to talk about this.
Okay. Fright Night, 1985. Very nice man attacked at home. Sad.
In the same spirit, Tad Gostel has reviewed this year's film Get Out, and his review reads, "Both sides were equally at fault. Sad." Could I just suggest, though,
yeah,
for all of our sakes, I know it's a funny joke, but it's low-hanging fruit.
Okay.
Could we get through Scary Movie Night, Movie Month without bringing that up excessively? Because I'm enjoying Scary Movie Month because, and here I'm paraphrasing Eric Ashberschlager, our friend, I'm enjoying Scary Movie Month because it's taking me away from Scary Movie Month.
Bleh.
Come on, you guys can do better than that.
Ross says of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Hopper does movie with Hoosier star. Wait, hold on, let me back it up. I screwed it up. Hooper does movie with Hoosier star Hopper.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Boom.
Mark Munson, friend of the site, reviews American Werewolf in London, and his review is in the form of SAT analogy question, which if you have, it's been a while since you've been in high school, SAT dropped those. It's no longer part of the test because young people can no longer do them. Jaws is to the ocean as American Werewolf is to porno theaters.
Frank Levesque of Dead Silence. Does anyone know Jeff Dunham's mailing address?
John Kervin reviews Tenebrae, and his review is probably still on John Saxon's sizzle reel.
Marcus Killerby of Shockma. Shockma was an inside job. Wake up!
Jeff Quinn reviews It Comes at Night with the seven-word review, which I think mirrors what both of us thought of the film. I'm still waiting for it to come.
Jeremiah Goodman of The Blob, 1958. Please listen to that teenager. He's 45.
I wrote that one down, too. Uncle Lou reviews the original version of The Hitcher. This was...
I wrote it down. It works better in print.
Yeah.
But it's...
See Rutger Hauer kill. See Thomas Howell.
Robin Buckley of The Cat and the Canary. Why be such a dick in Will?
I have a warm spot in my heart for The Cat and the Canary. Mac McIntyre, again, reviewing the original 1931 Frankenstein, writes, "Where's Little Girl Lake Toss iPhone game?"
Oh, here's another political one, so cover your ears. Dragpad says of King Kong 1933, "Racism? Sexism? A wall? God damn it."
Yeah, my reaction exactly. Paul Calvert reviews Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, by writing, "Dr. Whiskey fucks, then saves the world."
Keith Love of Howling 2, just fast forward to the end credits.
TYS/videotape, Ty's videotape,
sure,
reviews the original Hellraiser and brings up something I've been asking myself for literally 30 years, his seven-word review. What's with the chubby one wearing sunglasses?
I have another one from Marcus Killerby because it was just too funny to leave out, of Stage Fright 2014, the musical. On scale of do to ti, fa.
Yeah. I almost wrote that one down. And a friend of the site, Mike Piccoli, reviews Suspiria from 1977. La, 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 la.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you, everyone. Do you have any more? Okay, yeah.
No, that's it.
They're super funny so far. Again, it's hard to pick our favorites, but we will continue to read these every episode during Scary Movie Month, so please keep them coming. We're averaging about 100 a day thus far, so I'm excited about how this month is going to go. J-Bones, have you seen anything scary lately?
Like I said, it's been an embarrassment of riches, and on the advice of our own Adam Risky, I traveled to the Marcus Theater by my home because they're showing Tingler in a movie theater. And I said something the other night like, when do you get a chance to see the Tingler in a movie theater? And Patrick instantly said, a few years ago. I was with you. We saw it at the Portage. So I had forgotten about that. They showed it with that documentary about William Castle that's so much fun, Spying Tingler. So I went Sunday to see it at 2, not a popular time for the Tingler. And a friend of the site, Mike Piccoli, was there, and it was just the two of us.
No kidding.
Until about a minute.
Oh, that's the worst.
Before the movie started,
they tease
when
you.
A fun elderly couple came in.
All right.
And sat down. And I had brought the Tingler with me because I have a Tingler. And in the words of my wife, where the hell else would you take that? This is the time to bring the Tingler. And I didn't want to be a dick, but I knew that at some point I would be showing the elderly couple the Tingler. That is not a euphemism. And it got to the scene where all the lights go out and Vincent Price is encouraging you to scream. And Mike and I screamed like banshees. It was a full 3 minutes of screaming, and not continuous, but like a short one and then a long one, so you never know what's next. And it was the most fun I've had in a really long time.
That's awesome.
It was really great. It was like clears the gray clouds out of your head. And then the lights come back on screen, and Vincent Price says, you've done it. You've killed the Tingler. And that's when I, because I didn't want to scare the elderly couple. That's when I walked down holding the Tingler, and I said to them, we did it. He's right. We killed it. And then I showed it to them, and they thought it was the greatest thing they had ever seen. And at the end of the movie, when we were all leaving the theater, the gentleman thanked us for the enhancements.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was great.
And I was going to ask, how can you tell they were a fun elderly couple?
You could just tell.
Did they like drop their keys in a bowl on the way in?
That's that's dirty. Every time we try to talk about scary movies, Patrick wants to talk about sexy sex.
That's right.
No, you could just... I'm not in any way trying to speak ill of elderly people. But it seems to me there would be two types of elderly people. Elderly people who go to the Tingler,
right,
because the Tingler's fun,
right,
and elderly people who accidentally walk into the Tingler because they're actually there for something else. I don't see that happening by accident. And then you had seen the 4K of Suspiria about a month ago.
Yes.
And I did not go because it was past my bedtime, but I got a chance to see it last night.
Nice.
Courtesy of Regal.
Yes.
And just like your screening, boy, did they turn it up.
Yes.
There must be instructions to the projection.
Bananas, yeah.
It's crazy loud.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible transfer.
Yeah.
I've never seen the movie look like that at all. And again, like the 1931 Dracula, it really kind of makes you reappraise the film because I remember like smeary... This is the way I describe it now.
Yeah.
Smeary VHS transfers that are just, and I think to my young mind, I don't know, I can't speak to your young mind, you begin to associate crappy looking prints with like a crappy film or like didn't they
sure.
care enough? And it's just because of the transfer, the shitty fly-by-night video company or something. So lately, I've been watching things. I upgraded to 4K.
Yes.
And now I can get a 4K picture on my 4K TV, and I've been buying a couple discs just to see what it looks like. But also, the player upconverts regular Blu-rays, and I can even see a difference with them. Watching
okay.
Alien this afternoon, I've never seen it
wow.
look like that. And the closer you get to a pristine presentation... I've quoted this before. This is Doug Pratt in the DVD Laserdisc newsletter. There's fewer impediments to your enjoyment or your suspension of disbelief. The better it can look, the easier it is for you to join it. I've certainly never enjoyed Suspiria more, although, not to be a smartass, I noticed almost instantly that like every giallo, it suffers from first 10 minutes, last 10 minutes.
Sure, sure.
And recently I was watching Die, Monster, Die, mm-hmm. which is a film version of H.P. Lovecraft's The Color Out of Space. And I was interested to see what other critics said about it. And someone wrote, "This is another one of those films where people wander around a house for about an hour, bookended with two 10-minute sequences that are fantastic." So I guess that's just part of the genre, perhaps. And to be fair, Argento is trying to supply some stuff. It's not just the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes.
Sure.
Because, spoiler alert for Suspiria, the scene with the maggots?
Yeah.
That's, that gets me. That's, does it to you?
Not really.
I sit there and my head starts to itch and I like start scratching my head okay, Argento, you've pushed one of my buttons.
Right.
But that was incredible. And next week, the theater by our house is showing The Thing on a big screen. Is there anything better than October?
It's a good time. Suspiria, you know, the Chicago Cinema Society, is that what they're called, mm-hmm. are touring this print that they found in Italy, and it's going to screen here in Chicago in November.
Right.
And as tempted as I am to go just to see Suspiria on the big screen again, and on film no less, there's no way it can match that 4K.
And so I can't imagine topping that.
I think it would only diminish it, and I think I might be skipping it.
I don't know. I've had a lot of time in my head.
Our friend and contributor, Stephanie Crawford, tried to go to see the Regal Suspiria yesterday when we're recording this. On her birthday, no less, got to the theater, and I think they ended up like not being able to get the DCP to work, and so she didn't get to see it on her birthday.
Oh, my God.
So our heart goes out to you, Stephanie, because that sucks.
And last night, I mean, I get there crazy early because I'm insane. And I was afraid, there's not going to be a lot of people here. But at the very last minute, a whole bunch of people showed up, though not that many, which made me wonder. Last night they had two shows, 7 and 10, that maybe for that film, maybe people would rather go at 10. They're also showing it again tonight.
Oh, wow.
At 7 and 10. So that dilutes the audience. But lately, I wonder with like the TCM Fathom event screenings, they keep having them. So they must be popular somewhere or at some time.
There's no overhead, right? I mean,
I tend to go like Wednesday at 2, so it's me and like 5 senior citizens. But obviously, I hope they keep having them because they're great.
Yeah.
What have you seen?
I've seen some crap. My scary movie month is not off to a great start. Yesterday, I watched a movie called Blood Harvest from 1987. It's sort of a slasher starring Tiny Tim.
Oh, my God.
He of ukulele weirdo fame.
Oh, I know Tiny Tim.
He spends much of the movie in clown makeup, which is the only way to make him creepier, is to put him in clown makeup. It's not a good movie. It's streaming on Shudder. It's not a good movie. It's shockingly sleazy in the way it's essentially a 4-person movie, and one of them
does he
is
get married halfway through on the Jenny Carter
sadly show? He does not. Peter Krause is actually one of the stars from 6 Feet Under. This was an early role for him.
Wow.
And Sports Night, right? So it's essentially a 4-person movie, so almost nothing happens in the movie, but there's a lead actress who just is either appearing naked too much in the movie, wearing no pants. The camera is just really ogling her in a way that made me so uncomfortable. The movie doesn't have the feel of a sleazy movie the way some of these Italian movies do, but the way that it's directed, you just feel like it's a normal movie directed by a scumbag. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Recently on the website, I reviewed a film, and I use that term loosely, Dick Shark.
Ah, yes.
And that ogling phenomenon.
Yes.
Is, come on.
Right. Right. There's a thing where it's like part of the overall aesthetic, and that doesn't excuse it. Again, the Italians were famous for this, and that it becomes part of a piece. But in something like this, it's...
But in Dick Shark, the lead,
yeah,
who's fondling their breasts,
right,
on camera, is also the director.
Yeah, see.
So is this have your cake and eat it too? You're fondling their breasts on camera. You're ogling them off camera. Although, wouldn't it be more disturbing if Tiny Tim was naked too much?
Maybe it would be cooler. I also watched Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy for the first time.
Yes, and I saw your 7-word review, and
yes,
I was curious because that's the end of the cycle.
Yeah, you can tell. I didn't dislike it. I mean, I just wanted to take a shot at the Tom Cruise movie, but you can tell that it's out of gas a little bit. There are scenes that I think are kind of funny. There's the whole thing where they're trying to get each other to eat the hamburger and mm-hmm. passing the little amulet back and forth. There are moments here and there, but it is like, what was that one we saw a couple years ago? Abbott and Costello Go to Mars or something?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, I could tell that
the we're end of the road.
Right, exactly.
I haven't watched it yet, but I have this theory that I'm working on. They actually made a film very early in their career. I think it was their third film. It's called Hold That Ghost.
Okay.
And I think that's where all of that stuff started. And even they, the team, Universal, were surprised by how popular it was, how funny it is mm-hmm. when Lou Costello gets scared.
Mm-hmm.
Because talk about repeating something ad nauseum until you've just exhausted it.
Mm-hmm.
How many other films did they make where one of the chief
right.
attractions is the little pudgy guy gets really scared and he can't talk?
Right. Yeah, I wanted to put something on with my kids, and we've kind of burned through too many of the, like, Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride. My daughter would watch Corpse Bride every day if I would let her, but I'm trying to expose them to different stuff. And she has an aversion to Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein because I tried to show it to her like 2 years ago and she thought mm-hmm. it was too scary, so she still thinks it's too scary. She was bothered less by The Mummy and yesterday even said, can we watch that movie again?
I have had the pleasure of watching Corpse Bride with your daughter.
Yeah.
And not only did it speak to the sheer number of times that
yeah.
she's watched Corpse Bride,
yeah.
at one point she said, now wait, he's almost going to tip that over and it's almost going to fall, but he's going to catch it right on time.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And then the Johnny Depp character starts playing the piano and she says, that tune is beautiful. And then when the Corpse Bride is introduced, this is how I knew you were raising your daughter right. Rosie looks at us and says, she's beautiful. She has such pretty eyes. In fact, Jan, my lovely wife, was lobbying for Rosie to be Corpse Bride this year for Halloween. But Rosie decided
I'm lobbying for something similar as well because I don't like her choice of costume. But
the makeup for... First of all, we were at the Spirit Halloween Superstore, warning tangent, and they have this little bride's dress where for copyright they can't call it what it is, but it's clear that's what it is. And the makeup's a cinch.
Yeah.
That would be...
I'm trying.
I'd lobby for that, man.
And, you know, I'm trying to pick the kids' movie that we watch for our annual scary movie night, and she's pushing real hard for Corpse Bride, and my feeling is, but you've seen it so many times, let's watch something new, since I know I'll at least sort of have your attention in between running back and forth for Skittles and M&Ms.
Watching it a couple weeks ago with her reminded me of how much I like Corpse Bride.
Yeah.
How much more I like Corpse Bride than that other thing. That,
you should watch the other thing with her. You'll like it better.
I asked your son earlier today, so what's he showing on Scary Movie Night? And there was a pause. I don't know.
I have no idea.
He's keeping it close to the vest.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought about Beetlejuice maybe for the kids' movie.
I love Beetlejuice.
I know it's got an F-bomb in it, but they're not going to know what that is.
No. Every time I had a similar reaction to Alien this afternoon because I don't think I've seen Alien for maybe 10 years.
Oh, wow,
15
really?
Years.
No kidding.
And I remember the last time I saw it, Wonderfest in Louisville used to rent out a local theater. And part of Wonderfest is you'd hop on a bus and they'd take you to the theater. And one of the stars of the film would introduce it. So one year, Anne Robinson introduced War of the Worlds. And that year, Veronica Cartwright introduced Alien. And I think it was 15 years ago. So I was worried today, does this hold up? But good Lord, it holds up. And so does Beetlejuice. I think Beetlejuice holds up really, really well.
It's been a while since I last saw Beetlejuice, but that's what I may be thinking for the kids' movie. I have no idea what the other movies are going to be. But anyway, since you bring up Alien, gosh, let's talk about it.
And my God, obviously part of it was me psychically trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not excuse. Part of watching it today was me trying to justify what I had just spent on the new player.
Ah, yes.
Because I was like, I have never seen it look this good. This is the most amazing thing. And I already told Patrick about this, and I'm wondering if this is a phenomenon all over the world where the man is very much into audio video and the woman is not. And so for 10 years, you have an AM radio from Sears that runs on D batteries, and that's what you listen to music on. And then suddenly a relative dies and leaves you some money, and you buy a Denon 5.1 channel amp with surround sound. And now you're listening to music on this new system, and the woman says, I can't hear any difference. It looks astonishing, and I thought it was interesting because I think all the special effects hold up because they're physical practical effects except for the computer screens that date the film.
Right.
But my lovely wife, who's currently writing a book about Blade Runner, pointed out there are two computer screens in Alien that he later reused exactly the way they are in Blade Runner, his next film.
I did not know that.
The spinner cars. There's one where the car takes off and it says Purge.
Okay.
And that's right from Alien. And then there's another one where they're over the landing threshold when they're visiting the police station. I would say word for word, but that makes no sense. It's the same special effect. And I thought Ridley Scott does a really good job, like Spielberg, never really showing us the alien. The less you show it, the more effective that is. I don't think that could be argued. There's one scene, the scene with Yaphet Kotto and Veronica Cartwright, where I think maybe they should have showed it a little bit less, because that's the only scene where it looks like a guy in a suit.
Yeah, there's, I think, a little bit of that in the final fight with Sigourney Weaver. Yeah. It never phases me. Even that very famous shot where it pops out in the wall does look like a guy in a suit, but so what?
And you're watching the film, and it's twice as effective, because you keep having to remind yourself this was before CGI, and all the ships, the inside of the ship, I mean, all the art direction and the special effects are outstanding. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed it and was still scared by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get scared by it anymore, but that we could just go back to last year's podcast for that.
Well, no, I mean that it created in me a sense of suspense and unease.
Sure.
Maybe because I haven't seen it in 15 years, and so some of it was I really didn't remember. It makes me so sad when Harry Dean gets it, because he's one of my favorite characters in the movie.
No, him and Yaphet Kotto.
Yeah.
It's watching it yesterday. I rewatched it yesterday, and I probably watch it like once a year. It's a weird thing because I didn't grow up with Alien. I saw Aliens first. I was older by the time I saw Alien, and it was another one of these things where when I saw it, all I could do was measure it against my previous knowledge of it from pop culture. So like, oh, I had seen that scene with John Hurt in Spaceballs, and I had seen Aliens, and I knew what this movie was. And so the first time you watch it, all you're doing is like watching the beats play out so that now you know what that thing is. Okay, now I know what Alien is. It's very hard, I think, for me, and I've had this with several movies, to actually be affected by something like that that is so ingrained in us, even if we haven't seen it.
Because if you're tuned into pop culture, you got all these other references.
Exactly. Hey everybody, Patrick here. Just to remind you once more, please check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, hosted by Dion And Blake Fischera, previous guest of F This Movie, an author of Scored to Death, a fantastic book of interviews with composers of horror movies. It's perfect reading for Scary Movie Month, and Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers is a perfect podcast to listen to during Scary Movie Month, because during the month of October, Dion and Blake are publishing new shows every single week on horror movies. They're both big horror fans. They both know a ton about the genre, and they've seen a bunch of horror movies. They've covered a lot of horror movies in the past on Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. Their most recent show, of course, before October started, is on a favorite movie of mine, Blade Runner, to get ready for the release of Blade Runner 2049 this week. It's a great episode. Again, they bring that mix of nostalgia, of insight into the film, a healthy dose of humor. It's just super fun to listen to. But don't take my word for it. Check out this post we got to the F This Movie Facebook page that from Andrew R. that reads, "Hey, Patrick, just wanted to let you know that I'm Saturday Night Movie Sleepover's newest, biggest fan. I was listening to your podcast and you recommended Dion and Blake. I told them in an email that I was binge listening to them to catch up on their episodes. They thought that was awesome and they were grateful. Thanks for recommending the podcast." No, thank you, Andrew R., for listening to shows that are cool and for continuing to support good people, good podcasts, good movie discussions like Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. You could check them out at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com, get them in the iTunes store or wherever podcasts are found. They're on Twitter. They're on Facebook. If you're looking for a non-Scary Movie Month-related podcast, make sure you check out 21 Pod Street, Blake's newest podcast covering 21 Jump Street with Mike Vanderbilt from Daily Grindhouse and AVClub.com. Lots of great podcasts to listen to. It's going to be a great October, and the way to make it even better is to check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers episodes every single week this month. Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, it's like a sleepover for your ears.
Speaking of Harry Dean Stanton and Yaphet Kotto, though, one thing I was concentrating on this afternoon and really loving about the film is clearly those two are the lowest rung on the ladder on the ship. They're there to do the manual labor. There's a running joke that Yaphet Kotto is upset with the credits he's going to get paid and everything like that. But the more I thought about it, not only do I applaud the film for adding this subtext about the class structure on the ship, but given what we later learn about the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
Are you talking about in subsequent movies? Or in Alien?
In the first one.
Okay.
Well, is the company named in Alien?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, because I have it as part of that box set, and there's a menu, and it's a pain in the ass because I don't want to mix my movies. That clearly the corporation is prizing this beast over the crew. I mean, that's explicit. That's what sparks the third act. And because of that the film has this wonderful subtext about what corporations will do versus taking care of human beings, I thought it was really interesting that from the very beginning, we get this very clear idea of what the class structure is on the ship. The one thing you can't go back and see clean, though, is massive spoilers for Alien. Once you know the deep, dark secret of Ash, the Ian Holm character, I'm watching it today, and every single thing he says or does is a clue.
Yeah.
It just telegraphs it so beautifully from the very, I mean, everything, which I also give the film a lot of credit for.
Well, this was something you said before we turned the mics on, that the joke was we are going to start recording, read some 7-word reviews, say Alien's a perfect movie, and shut it off. Because it really is, and I don't say that lightly. Again, it took me a number of viewings to fully kind of wrap my head around all the stuff that this movie is doing and fall in love with it completely, because for years and years I was having this debate, well, I don't know which one I like better, Alien or Aliens, and the last 3 or 4 times I've seen Alien, it's really no contest. Like, I enjoy Aliens a lot. It's really fun. Alien is a masterpiece.
And I agree. The last time I saw Aliens, I was surprised. Maybe it was just the mood I was in or something. I was surprised the extent that it didn't hold up. But what I've always said forever is that Alien is a horror film. Mm-hmm. And Aliens with an S is more of an action film.
Definitely.
More of up James Cameron's alley. But the thing with Alien is, and I find this interesting because you said you had witnessed all this other pop culture effluvium that grew up around the film. I can tell you that when I saw this opening weekend in a theater, the revelation about Ash knocked everyone on their ass.
So that's kind of where I was going. Everything about this movie, there are a handful of movies that I truly wish I could travel back in time and see for the first time with everyone else. Because while I can appreciate the filmmaking and everything that Alien does so well, so many of its secrets had been ruined for me by the time I came around to seeing it. Even just the idea of, hey, we're janitors in space, and now there's a monster on board. I mean, had been done in 1950s science fiction, but not like this. Not in a way that's so genuinely terrifying. The John Hurt reveal, the Ash reveal. There are so many things that happen in this movie that to experience that for the first time, not knowing what was coming.
I was going to say, in 1977.
79? 78?
Am I screwing that up again?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Is Suspiria 1977? Is that why I'm making this?
Suspiria is Alien is 79.
Okay, yep. I got Suspiria on the brain.
Me too.
In 1979, Stephen King even writes about this in Dance Macabre. No one had ever seen anything like that. So I consider the fact that I'm sitting there opening weekend before it could get spoiled mm-hmm. for me back then to be terrific, because that just blew everyone away. And thinking about it now, that was such a big deal. Clearly, that's the scene everyone talked about, mm-hmm. that it sort of hides the fact that there's this second
right.
punch to the right. stomach in the film. Like you just said, I sometimes wish that I could have seen Psycho the weekend it came out.
Right, right.
Before anyone, because from what I've read, it was really, there was pandemonium
wow.
in the theater.
Yeah. There may be another movie that I have thought of that's not coming to me right now, but Alien right now is the one more than any other movie that I wish I could go back and see opening weekend. Because just think about, again, it's such an accepted part of our popular culture, not just because it's been filtered down through all these other media, but because there's been 8 subsequent or however many Alien movies, and every single one of them has a facehugger, and every single one of them has the egg, and every single one of them has the chestburster. I mean, in 1979... when this thing is on John Hurt's face, what is that?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
You think exactly what each member of the crew feels. Yaphet Kotto's like, freeze him.
Right.
Freeze him. And this one thinks this, and this one thinks this. And, of course, Dallas, the Tom Skerritt character, well, you should listen to the science officer. He's the science officer.
Everything.
Which I also love.
Of course.
Because it's that sort of thinking that leads to your downfall.
And we hear all these other characters give advice, and they're right. Ripley is saying things where you're like, we should believe Ripley. So many things about the movie are revolutionary, even down to the idea that, you know, every 1950s science fiction movie, or Planet of the Vampires, which everyone accuses Alien of ripping off, which I don't think it does.
No, I don't either.
Whatever. There's a team of scientists, and they go out into space, and they're looking for this thing, and they encounter, and that's not Alien. These are just blue collar people doing a job and ill equipped to deal with what they are confronted with. And that is revolutionary. That was always my big, I'm sure I'm repeating myself. My big complaint when they first announced, I think, Prometheus, hey, we're doing a prequel to Alien. And my objection was always, but the beauty of Alien is we're living in a world where there's no alien. We're just doing our job. Mm-hmm. And then, holy shit, there's an alien. And now we have to fight it or it's going to kill us. And no other movie can recapture that. And so to go back and to do a prequel that then explains, well, here's where the alien comes from, it robs Alien of that concept. I tried so hard as I was watching Alien yesterday to divorce it from other stuff, because when they get to the scene with the big space jockey,
oh yeah,
I mean, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. It's amazing.
Even the shot of the horseshoe right. ship has now been,
and you're just like, what is that? Again, I kept trying to put my brain back in 1979. What is that? Oh, the movie doesn't tell you. Awesome. Like, I miss the Ridley Scott that would just leave shit to suggestion, yes. to interpretation, that didn't feel the need to spell out every single beat of everything he was doing. Even, I mean, you can even track the various cuts of Blade Runner, where yeah. by the time we get to the final cut, boy, he sure wants you to think this about Deckard, and he's going to make sure that you think it, and it's a bummer.
Part of that might not be Ridley Scott completely. I see that as part of where our culture is going. And I don't mean to strain the metaphor, but when I was a child, if I didn't know something, I would have to put up with not knowing it or expend considerable energy to find out. In today's world yeah. of let me check my phone, people have no patience for, what's the word I'm looking for ambiguity.
Right.
Because all ambiguity can be solved with my little pocket friend. I also love how Alien upends two treasured traditions. You ready for this?
I think so.
I'm watching Alien today, and I'm looking at the production design, which is marvelous. And some of the production design seems to owe a little bit to 2001: A Space Odyssey, as does every science fiction film ever made. And I began to think about 2001. This is specifically the scene where Tom Skerritt goes in that little confession room with all the blinking lights, and he's talking to the mother. And that production design, that art direction, reminded me of 2001. And I thought, well, in 2001, you have a team of people who go out and they discover something, and that discovery leads to the next evolution right. of humankind.
Right.
And in Alien, a group of people discover something that's really, really mm-hmm. bad mm-hmm. and should have been left where it was.
Yeah.
The second tradition is, in 50s science fiction, we usually have a military figure who's seen as bad. Let's kill it. And a scientist figure who's seen as good. I'm thinking of the original Howard Hawks, The Thing.
Yeah.
Where we can learn from it. You're smarter than our. Please, you must understand. And of course, because it's the 50s, he gets batted aside because it turns out to be bad. But in a lot of those films, think of It Came from Outer Space. Mm-hmm. Richard Carlson is the person we're supposed to side with when the whole town goes bull goose loony.
Right.
And now in Alien, the scientist is Ash. And that whole trope has been upended
right.
because he's,
right.
oh, you have no idea
right.
how bad he is.
And every subsequent Alien movie has had the Ash stand-in.
Yes.
The change in Aliens is that it's not Bishop, the android. It's Burke, the Paul Reiser character.
Right.
Everyone has a company man, Michael Fassbender, whatever. The one who is more interested in studying the alien and not killing it. It's like, we've done this 6 times already, and it's not going to be done better than Ian Holm.
I love it so much when Ian Holm tries to kill Sigourney Weaver with a rolled up magazine. And it looks to be one of Yaphet Kotto or Harry Dean Stanton's skin mags, because he picks it up off a pile where the wall is covered with pinup
yeah.
pictures.
Yeah.
And at first, like I said, I hadn't seen it in a long time. I thought he was rolling it, and he was like going to start batting her with it. It didn't occur to me that, man, to be killed by having a rolled-up magazine shoved down your throat. But again, that shows the genius of the film, because we have a symbolic, how can I put this? It very much mirrors what happened to the John Hurt character.
Right, right.
That it's penetrative, and
right.
it's very disturbing through your mouth.
Right. By now, everybody, of course, knows that the Ripley character was written to be a man, and they just decided to cast it as a woman. Yet another sort of revolution that the movie is doing. And it's
I think that's the reason it works.
Okay.
Because there aren't concessions made to that.
Right.
It is unspoken.
Exactly.
She's the one who survives.
There's
maybe
no need
because
to.
All along she's the only one who has any interest in A, doing things correctly. I love the scene where she talks to Ash. You know, I was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
With him out of the ship, mm-hmm. I was in charge, mm-hmm. and I said, don't open the door. And they have that wonderful conversation where, ironically, he goes for humanity. Well, I wanted to save his life. I wanted to. What would you have done? No, I told you. I ordered, you know, and that is something else I've been noticing lately in some of the movies I've been writing about, that movies in the past were willing to slow down, at least for a second. Because that conversation between Ripley and Ash is really interesting. And she doesn't push, but she comes in and she's interested. I gave the order not to open the door. Why did you open the door?
I can't believe how much Alien is willing to slow down. I clocked it yesterday. I think it's like 57 or 58 minutes by the time that the alien bursts out of John Hurt's chest. So we have a movie called Alien. The first appearance of the alien in its tiny little form is an hour into a movie that's under 2 hours. And it has so much patience. And movies today don't really have patience. Again, I'm not trying to complain. I like a lot of movies today. But compare what Ridley Scott does in Alien to what Ridley Scott does in Alien Covenant from a few months ago.
Yeah.
Where it's just a slasher movie from pretty early on. Characters are exploding and, you know, whatever. One of the things that I love about the movie, and again, you know, Ridley Scott was kind of hired because he had made these really slick, sleek commercials. And people thought, well, that is a cool aesthetic for this science fiction movie. And he very much brings that. I mean, so many shots could be, I'm not a fan of whatever that website is, or maybe it's a Twitter account where it's like every frame a painting, or one perfect shot, those kind of sites. But every frame in the movie could be its own screen grab that you could hang on the wall as art. And yet, I don't think in most cases he sort of is masturbatory about dwelling on the images.
No.
It's not, look at this canvas I have painted.
My feeling is back then, he considered it part of the job, the whole Martin Scorsese thing we're always joking about, that it's pictures. In the sequence when Harry Dean Stanton goes to look for the cat,
mm-hmm.
he's doing all these things that you wouldn't necessarily have to do. Even though we're in a grimy ship and he's in one of the more unattractive parts of the ship, the lighting and the art direction is beautiful. At one point, the light is coming and it's just like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But that I think at that point in his career, he thought that was part and parcel of making a movie. Might we compare Ridley Scott to Robert De Niro? And we learn that Quentin Tarantino's warning about directors and people getting older is true, that you start out and you're always doing your best work when you're young. And then at some point you wind up having a career. Think of Al Pacino, where you're making fun of yourself or you're trading on your earlier fame and it's unavoidable. And that's just what happens. Or you retire. But have you noticed in 2017, I'm sorry, I'm filibustering.
No, you're fine.
In 2017, no one retires anymore.
No.
You just keep doing it.
Just Sean Connery.
And in the case of some people.
And Gene Hackman.
I'm looking at you, Paul McCartney. Your legacy is assured.
Right.
And if you like to go out every night and play, I'm not going to stop you from doing that. But at some point, don't you say, that's the end. That's it.
What frustrates me about Ridley Scott, who I will maintain is still an inconsistent director and has always been.
Yes, and I don't want to make it sound as if he hasn't made a couple films in the last 10 years that I've enjoyed. That's not true. I like you saying it's inconsistent.
Yeah.
But he is not the director he once was.
No.
Where he could make Alien and Blade Runner back to back.
Right, sure.
And back then told someone, this is the rare Ridley Scott quote my wife had never heard. He told someone right before Blade Runner that he wanted to become the John Ford of science fiction.
I kind of wish he would have. What I like that he does in Aliens so much, and some of this is credit to him as a director, and some of it I think is credit to the Dan O'Bannon screenplay, although we have to talk about Walter Hill also. His aesthetic is very cold. He does bring, as you said, even though the production design owes something, I think Ridley Scott's camera owes a great deal to 2001 also in the way that it is sort of an observer yes. of these events, right? So there's a coldness to his aesthetic. And yet, I think the movie avoids being cold by virtue of the fact that all of the characters have so much humanity and are so just sort of normal, blue-collar, and we're dropped right into it. Watching it yesterday, I was reminded of a Robert Altman movie. The way we just drop right in, yeah. and everybody's somebody, and they all have their roles, but we don't get all these expository scenes about, hey, I'm this guy, I do this on the ship, hey, I'm this guy.
They wake up, it looks like they're having breakfast,
right?
And in less than 5 minutes... we know who yep. each one of these people are. It's a model of concision.
And we're just dropping in on their conversations. I love near the end of the film after I think it's after Dallas goes, where things really start to break down and everybody has different ideas about what we should do next. Maybe it's after Harry Dean Stanton. I don't know. But I just thought it was interesting. It was the first time I really started watching it and was reminded of a Romero film in the way that he often addresses kind of the breakdown of certain systems once the shit hits the fan.
Oh, yeah.
And again, there's no villains except for Ian Holm. No one on the ship is a bad guy. They all just have a different idea about what should be done and how do we get out of this. And they're normal people dealing with extraordinary circumstances. Veronica Cartwright ends up being Judith. What, you know, Night of the Living Dead,
which I love because as we all know, I think, I got this from reading a wonderful book by Ben Sherwood called The Survivors Club. When things go wrong, some people freeze. That is a very common reaction. Also, according to the book, that gets you killed, but
right. As it does.
Some people freeze. I also think I love your point about how the actors do so much to mitigate the coldness, the analytic quality of his mm-hmm. camera. But I also think the art direction mm-hmm. does that because it's so detailed and so real. And so that's the great cliche that the ship looks lived in.
Right.
But... the other thing I noticed was the score is by Jerry Fielding, right?
Okay.
I think so. I'm getting old. Better
check. I'm confirming.
Better check my math.
Jerry Goldsmith. I was
Jerry
like,
Goldsmith.
Who's Jerry Fielding?
My bad. Right just now when I said that, Chaby shouted wherever he was, God damn you! Jerry Goldsmith.
Yeah.
And I really liked the score.
Sure.
But today, I noticed, and my wife noticed too, there's a lot of score at the beginning, and the minute the alien shows up, the score almost disappears for a pretty long time, mm-hmm. maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. There's very, very little score, if any. And then at the end, when she feels that steady state has been restored, the score comes flooding back, which I thought was so beautiful because we're so used to that at the denouement of
right.
a movie
right.
that he's also using the music to establish what I always compare it to a roller coaster, and for the longest time what Cameron did in Aliens, where you think it's over and there's one more drop. But that really starts in Alien, because we honestly think when she's petting the cat that that's we're, you know, a couple seconds away from a freeze frame or something. But the score is really good.
It is. And I, like you, I'm so glad you mentioned that, have incorrectly given James Cameron so much credit for doing that in Aliens, where your movie clock says, okay, it's done. And then there's one more big thing that we didn't see coming. And I always really liked that about Aliens, and I still do. But when I was rewatching Alien yesterday, I had forgotten that that's the way it was structured. And I was like, holy shit. No, Cameron's just repeating that same structure from Ridley Scott.
And there's another one, too. I always gave Cameron a lot of credit because the whole thing about giving birth and life, and in the sequel there's this child that she's watching, and we find out that the big bad alien is a queen, so there's that. And it ends up in that big fight where she's in the power loader and what, take your hands off.
Get away from her, you bitch.
Get away from her, you bitch. That in Alien, the one we watched, the computer on the ship is called Mother. And Ripley initiates the auto-destruct sequence and then thinks better of it. And she has a very short time to do the things you need to stop it. And it seemed to me, watching it today, she makes it. She does it in the time allotted.
Right.
But it keeps counting down. And Sigourney Weaver hits the monitor with something and yells, "You bitch."
Mm-hmm.
So even that whole zeitgeist,
right,
seems to have its genesis in this film.
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, so many essays and books, and like David Scull writes about Alien as a representation of reproductive fears in the late 70s. Because obviously there's so much imagery in the film that is sexual. I don't think H.R. Giger was shy about giving it the alien a giant penis head and John Hurt being implanted with an egg and, you know, all of this stuff. But there are moments where it becomes explicit. I'm thinking of the tail sort of snaking up between Veronica Cartwright's legs,
right,
which
and then we cut
I feel
away,
pretty icky about.
Which leads us to wonder just how she's dispatched.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't love that. And maybe this is me projecting something on the movie, and maybe this is not fair. But at the end of the film, I think, I don't know how to say this without sounding like such a scumbag, the way that the camera observes Sigourney Weaver and the way that she is costumed during that last sequence seems strange to me because, yes, on the one hand, she's going back into hypersleep, so she's going to be in her underwear. There's a practical justification for why she's just in her underwear and a very thin little tank top or t-shirt or whatever. But I also think there's something weird about, am I wrong to feel like Ripley is being sexualized for the first and only time in this movie?
I thought that too, especially because for the majority of the film, her gender is not called attention to her.
Really, no one's is. Called,
except for the fact that none of the men listen to her do what she says. It's not called attention to.
Right.
Because I've always maintained that this is a horror movie, that this is a haunted house in outer space where we wander around. I thought, besides the narrative necessity of that she's actually going back in the sleep mm-hmm. pod, and you don't wear a lot in the sleep pod, was the purpose of that is to make her more vulnerable.
Okay.
That you have far fewer recourses
sure.
if you're wearing a little pair of panties and a little top. You're more vulnerable.
Sure. There's just some, and I was watching it yesterday wondering, am I just an asshole? Do you know what I mean?
And I think what might...
The answer is always yes, by the way.
What might justify my reading is the minute she notices what's hiding, she immediately
she climbs into
puts
the
right, very
right.
concealing spacesuit
sure.
on
sure.
and becomes less vulnerable.
I was amazed, too. You said, you know, the score kind of drops out at a certain point.
Yeah.
So much of the movie is so quiet, even structurally, that, you know, it takes a long time for the alien to appear. After that first hour, we're just kind of wandering around space, discovering things happen. I think a lot of other movies then, once the shit sort of hits the fan, would kick into overdrive, and now the cuts would be faster, and the soundtrack would be louder, and people would be shouting. And Alien never really does that. It doesn't really change its pacing that much.
What it does do is, once it quiets down and the score goes away for a while, there's the heartbeat, which, is that the ship? Is that the sound the ship makes, or is that a sound that the filmmakers have put on the film to engender suspense? My wife suggested the ship is making that noise.
I mean, honestly, that would be my assumption. I think it's, you know, trying to have it both ways. But there's nothing else really that Ridley Scott does as a filmmaker that's just sort of this artificial, non-diegetic thing to make you scared. So I would have to assume that it's something on the ship.
This time watching it, I thought the heartbeat was really, really effective.
Yeah. Yeah. That idea that space is lived in, you know, I know Alien gets a ton of credit for that. And, Star Wars was kind of one of the first movies to do that aesthetic. But again, I want to say it was Patton Oswalt. He wrote an essay maybe about Alien where he said something about – he was talking about the different ways that Alien feels groundbreaking. And one of them was space is a job. And I just thought that was such an interesting – way of looking at this, that these are just such normal people. We always assume, because of how we tend to view science fiction, we see somebody in space, well, they belong there because we've sent the best of the best into space.
And in Alien, they're minors.
Right.
So breaking my rule from the beginning of the podcast.
Ah, yes.
That if all the mining jobs have gone away, someone has found a job for all of these miners in space.
So why is Alien so perfect and then all of the subsequent Alien movies not as good? Because some of them are directed by Ridley Scott.
Right. And every time I bring this up, some snot nose on the commentary, once it was you. there are very few sequels that make it.
Okay.
Very few. They do exist.
Yeah.
They do exist. It is possible.
Sure.
It is rare.
Sure.
And so a couple months ago or a year ago, Risky was talking about the possibility of a comedy sequel being successful.
Yeah.
And he went into some detail about why they can't.
Yeah.
Ebert used to call any sequel a filmed deal.
Right.
The film exists because we're going to try to squeeze some more money out of it. Aliens, the sequel, is not without its pleasures. I know there's a lot of people who love it and love it more than the original.
Yeah.
And it's certainly full of fun and action and some interesting ideas. But by the time we get to 3, Grimm and the studio played with it and Fincher was unhappy. And then 4, which is just... I almost like 4 because it's so loony. It's just this...
That's kind of how I feel about it, yeah.
Let's give it to Luc Besson and see what he has to do about it. And it's a weird skull child.
Well, and the one advantage, again, that I think the Alien series has that maybe some other science fiction or horror franchises don't have is the distinction of voices in terms of none of the 4 original movies. I'm not talking about Prometheus, I'm not talking about Covenant, I'm not talking about Alien versus Predator, like these 4 in the original run. None of them are the same movie, even though they're all the same movie.
So maybe one of the mistakes was, I'm going back to what Carpenter originally wanted Halloween to become, this sort of anthology series.
Right.
That if you had started from scratch with each sequel, a new director, and no Ripley... Maybe the individual films would have been more successful. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of sequels.
They exist because we like these characters. We like spending time in this world. We want to see the same story play out, but differently. I grew up just on sequels. They were always a fact of life for me as a part of my movie diet. And there are plenty of sequels that I like. I'm not anti sequel in theory, but I'm always amazed these days when I'll be listening to a podcast or something. And I remember listening to one, I think it was Slash Film, talking about Atomic Blonde, which was not a movie I particularly liked. But they end the review by saying, like, yeah, I can't wait for Atomic Blonde 2, or I can't. And I just thought, why? Why is that your first thought? That, like, let's do this again with these same actors. If you love Atomic Blonde, great. Watch it a bunch of times. Like, I don't know that I need... This is a different conversation, but just this idea let's retread this thing that I liked, but in a different way, because I liked John Wick a lot. I also really liked John Wick 2. But had they not made John Wick 2, like, I would just watch John Wick.
And John Wick 2, I will argue, is different than John Wick. It's not exactly the same thing done
It's not
again,
exactly the same, but it's essentially the same.
It's the first movie amped up.
Exactly, which is what a lot of sequels are, right. You know.
But maybe it's this American obsession with new. It's new. It's new and improved because, really, instead of Alien Covenant, why not re-release Alien to theaters?
Yeah.
Because as I've discovered in the last 3 months, people will not go to a movie theater for the most part to see an older film.
Right.
The Music Box and some cult films notwithstanding, which is a shame because, if anything, one of the many joys of my retirement has been seeing these films in a theater again the way they were meant to be seen, unless they're on my 4K TV.
I saw Alien theatrically in the mid-2000s. They re-released the director's cut for a short time, and that was how Erica saw it for the first time, and she just flipped for it.
And that was the screening at Wonderfest with Veronica Cartwright. Okay. That was the first time I had ever seen the director's cut.
Yeah, Ridley Scott just can't leave his movies alone. It's not a worse movie, but it's certainly not a better movie.
I went online to look at the changes because I believe both of us watched the theatrical cut.
Yeah. I mean, the big change is the discovery of Dallas, right?
Right. It's 2 seconds here and 3 seconds there. And in fact, the director's cut is shorter by a couple. I mean, it's just...
This is my frustration with Ridley Scott, is he just can't stop tinkering and going back... Like, he makes The Martian, great. He makes American Gangster, cool. I didn't see the movie where, like, Russell Crowe gets a vineyard, right? But I'm fine with Ridley Scott making it. If Paul McCartney wants to put out a new album of Paul McCartney music, fine, great. Don't re-release, like, oh, Paul McCartney remixed and played a bunch of new parts on Let It Be, and he's putting that out. Like, that I'm not interested in. I don't need Ridley Scott going back to this franchise and feeling like I have so much more to say about it, because it turns out, no, you don't. I saw Prometheus. I saw Covenant. You're just weakening a legitimate masterpiece.
It's hanging in the Louvre.
Alien is one of the greatest horror movies ever made. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Top 10. Hands down.
Okay.
No argument.
One of these days, maybe we'll do it for next year's Scary Movie Month. I want to do another episode where we do our... Maybe we'll even expand it to our top fives. Because our first Scary Movie Month, we did our top fives.
And that was a long time ago.
Years ago. 7 years ago. My list would be completely different.
And that was that weird thing where we were doing the best and the worst,
right.
And it went long.
Right.
But it's so much more fun to talk about good movies.
Yeah.
It's like there's a whole big podcast on good movies, and then this tumor that we cut off.
And it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah, we foisted that off as a separate podcast.
But I think it would be fun to revisit, because I think our lists might be different, and I think expanding it to 10...
I know they would be.
...would be even more exciting.
Next year.
I'm into it. Everyone's going to be so excited to hear it. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. This came by listener request, and I don't remember who it was, but somebody had said, hey, I'd love to hear you guys talk about Alien, and we decided almost a year ago, like, oh, we need to do Alien for Scary Movie Month.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And so thank you guys for listening. Please continue to take part in the Scary Movie Challenge, 7-word reviews every day. Find more of our stuff at fthismovie.com. We're on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We will have more bonus Scary Movie Month episodes all month long. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.